Well, hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, today we have another double feature of classic Desert Oracle Radio for you. Our first episode was produced by Ken Lane on July 12, 2019, and it's titled The Haunted Petroglyph. Things were rocking, so hold on tight.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the Mojave and everything is shaking. Did you feel that? You better check the recent earthquakes on the shake map. Make sure that wasn't just your imagination. Everyone's starting to walk around like they just got off a boat. You know, lurching around. Grabbing onto a cholla for stability. We did have a couple of monster earthquakes here in the Mojave. Maybe you felt them. Maybe you heard about them later. To our friends and listeners up in Ridgecrest and Trona, I hope your nerves aren't driving you batty right about now. There's really nothing you can do about earthquakes. They're going to happen or not, and they aren't going to ask for your permission. Luckily, there's not a lot of damage that can be done to a one-story, 300-square-foot cabin on 5 acres. Just ride it out. We'll just ride it out together. Now, an interesting thing happened a few days before the first big quake, the 6.9, and it's enough to make you wonder. An ancient petroglyph, the sunburst petroglyph, was stolen. Stolen out of a canyon outside of Ridgecrest. In one of those dense concentrations of ancient petroglyphs around Ridgecrest and on the China Lake Naval Weapons Station. You're supposed to say aboard China Lake, I believe. And that's because if you're in the Navy, then literally any structure or location anywhere is considered a boat. So when you see Navy personnel boarding a regular Southwest jetliner, they always say something to the pilot, like, nice boat you've got here in the water. Just part of the Navy culture. Now, when I look at the sunburst petroglyph with its triangular pattern of three brilliant lights, well, you can guess what I think about. Because it looks just like you're looking up at the underside of one of those big black triangles always zooming over the desert after hovering in place about 100 feet above the ground with the spotlight looking around for something. Maybe it's looking for you. I mean, it happens. That is not in dispute. And the person or organization behind this theft of a 500 or 600 pound ancient boulder with this ancient rock art, they must have gone in with a team of mercenaries or commandos or droids or whatever, and maybe a helicopter. And off they go to deliver the prize to some supervillain's lair. maybe in one of those vulgar high-rise apartment buildings above the Las Vegas Strip. And then the earthquake started, and the whole desert around Ridgecrest and China Lake has been shaking and rocking ever since. I think we had better find that sunburst petroglyph and put it back. Right back where it belongs. We've got Brendan Mays on the line, and Brendan, I have started to worry about you. I have not seen you around town lately. How are you doing, and what have you been up to?
Well, Ken, I haven't been around town lately. I've been out pursuing many of my multiple ventures. As you know, Mojave Miracle Holdings is the umbrella group that runs a myriad of industries that we have. One of them, of course, is disaster relief. We have a very good relationship with FEMA and with the Army Corps of Engineers and with a bunch of other government agencies providing relief for people who are in dire need of help or assistance from the government. I've been out in the Searles Valley working around Ridgecrest, dealing with the fallout from these multiple earthquakes we've been having. Been spending a lot of time out there, helping the community, getting block grants going, getting money coming in, getting money going out, making sure the people are receiving all the assistance that the government can provide.
Can you tell me what you're doing and who is benefiting from it?
Well, I'd like to think that everybody benefits from the work that we do at Mojave Mirage Industries. We have multiple services that we provide. As you know, Ken, we do package fulfillment services for a lot of large online retailers.
Right, Brendan, could you tell us what you're doing up in the earthquake zone? And as certainly frightening as the earthquake was, it seems like most of the damage has already been at least assessed and is on its way to repair.
Yeah, well, it turns out that a lot of the communities, Ridgecrest in particular, but surrounding communities, were all built pretty recently. And so the earthquake codes kept a lot of those buildings from getting as damaged as we thought that they would be. And so some of the money that we thought we were going to spend didn't actually need to be spent. So we're trying to look at what we're going to do with this surplus government funding. We're not exactly sure where it's going to go yet. We have some ideas.
So you're holding on to some disaster relief funds that are intended for the people of Trona and Ridgecrest. Is that correct?
Holding on to it, yes, I guess you could say that we're holding on to it. We plan on reinvesting it and seeing if we can make that pile of money grow to a greater degree and see if we can't reinvest that money into the community in some way.
Now, when you were up investigating the damage caused by these double earthquakes, can you tell us some of the damage that you saw?
I guess I could. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of damage out there. Some of the mobile home parks, the mobile homes were knocked off their foundations. And of course, by foundations, I just mean house jacks and wheels. They're not really houses. Some roads were cracked up. We had some issues with broken gas lines. We had a broken water main outside of Searles. The down power lines on the west side of the valley, which is not our jurisdiction, so we had nothing to do with that. But it seems that most of the damage occurred actually at the Naval Air Weapons Station at China Lake. That seems to be where most of the damage has occurred.
Now, this is interesting because a number of listeners have forwarded to me, I believe from your Facebook group, this flyer that has been posted around Trona and Ridgecrest. And it does have your phone number and one of your company names here. And it seems to be implying that the earthquake was caused by some sort of secret project going on at China Lake and that your company is looking to represent people who suffered damages. Am I reading this correctly?
Yes, Ken. I believe you're referring to a flyer that was put out by one of our top sales guys, Tom McClintock. And he kind of released that flyer and put it up without vetting it with us or the government first. So I'd kind of like to walk that flyer back. If a flyer could walk, I'd like to walk it right back to Mojave Mirage Industries and kind of put that thing under wraps. A word has gotten out. Some information has kind of escaped the grid that had gotten out there into the environment that probably should have been kept a little bit more under wraps. And we're trying to walk this back and talk this back and see if we can't...
Well, God, but before we do, before we walk this back, we should at least point out that this is your company. This is your picture of you, and that's your office here in Joshua Tree. It says that underground laser weapon testings...
Oh, boy.
...caused these catastrophic earthquakes.
I don't know why I would say something crazy like that. I don't know where you're getting these flyers from. You know, I have a lot of enemies out here. Unfortunately, when you do good work, when you reach to the top, there's a lot of crabs in that barrel that try to grab you with their pinchers and just drag you back down to the bottom of the barrel. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, Ken. And I'm just telling you that I don't think we really had anything to do with these flyers. I don't know who's putting them up. And I don't know why I would say anything about our program, or I'm sorry, the government's program, to destabilize the tectonic plates with lasers or with nuclear devices or fracking or, hell, even water extraction. I don't know why anybody would be letting that stuff out there. It's kind of a misinformation campaign, Ken. Seems like some sort of a doxing campaign. You know, a lot of people have published my personal information. They published my Facebook page, my home address, various rental properties I have all around the country, and my bank accounts. This is some sort of concerted effort to make me appear to be a real bad guy. Somebody's up to no good, and that's not what we're about at Mojave Mirage Industries. Can you know that?
Well, do you feel like perhaps your public statements that you've made as an individual, not necessarily representing your company, about your belief in some of these sort of subterranean projects is adding to this idea that you actually do believe in this?
I have gone on record, so to speak, as to speaking of the environmental liabilities that are associated with certain things, certain projects, certain industries that we're involved with. You know, we're a responsible company, equal opportunity employer. You know, we promote women to high ranks in our company. That one of our divisions is...
But Mojave Mirage is a contractor at China Lake NWS.
No, Ken, that's correct.
Were you on base when the earthquake struck, either the first or the second?
I don't see how that has anything to do with this flyer or my industries or my work with the federal government or
I'm
with the
just,
Department of
I'm just curious if you were there and you could tell us what it was like.
Well, Ken, I guess it would be fair to say that I was in the area. And whether or not I was actually on the air weapons station is a matter of conjecture or something that I really can't address. But yes, I was in the area, and it was quite a shock. Well, you know how earthquakes are, Ken. There's a big bang, there's a bunch of shaking, stuff falls over, goes on for a little while, you think, gosh, do I run outside and get hit by all the falling glass? Do I tuck and cover? Do I get into a doorway? What do I do here? So we all basically just sat still in the conference room. Some guys jumped under the desk. It's kind of funny to see a general all dressed up in his, you know, going down on their hands and knees, climbing underneath the table. We're seeing gold braid flapping, epaulets getting stuck on the little divider in between the table, hats knocked off, and we had a good laugh about it. It was actually kind of funny. They were looking at each other under the table, waiting for this thing to pass, and we're thinking, boy, how many kilotons was this one, you know? Because, you know, they work with weapons out there, Ken. They blow a lot of stuff up. We wouldn't think it would be man-made weapons that triggered the earthquake because we're, well, not we. I'm not privy to this stuff, but they know what weapons they've got and when they fire them off. These things just don't, well, I guess they do go off by accident every now and then. And so that maybe was a concern. That maybe perhaps one of their, what they call them their babies or their children, might have had a little temper tantrum out of class, so to speak, but we didn't necessarily think that that was the problem. I don't know how much of a secret it is or isn't, but it's pretty well known. You can look it up on the internet. That the Department of Defense runs some pretty top secret weapons programs out there at the Naval Air Weapons Station at China Lake. That's no secret. And so we do know that we've been working with lasers and thermonuclear devices and other high energy particle physics to develop new weapon systems. So none of this stuff's exactly top secret. I mean, the stuff that goes on out there obviously is top secret, but it's not like, this is very cutting edge technology, Ken. So of course it's top secret. And of course you can't talk about any specifics, but in general, everybody knows that at the Department of Defense or Navy or Air Force, a research facility, that you're going to be working on top secret stuff. And a lot of that stuff's going to be weapons. And of course, we've seen the movies, we've read the novels. We know it's going to have something to do with lasers. It's going to have something to do with particle physics. It's going to have something to do with particle accelerators. It's going to have something to do with things that go boom. I spend most of my time I'm spending indoors. I'm not necessarily a stargazer. I don't go out and look at the big, broad, beautiful vistas. I do when I'm driving around or flying around. I see this stuff and it's impressive to me, but I don't have my eyes trained to the sky. I've got more my ear to the ground. And so this earthquake phenomenon is of great interest to me. As you know, we've been having problems with Iran. And as you know, Iran is affected by heavy earthquakes, heavy earthquake activity. They've had numerous earthquakes. So we're looking at the vulnerabilities that Iran has and how maybe we can bring them to bear with this nuclear enrichment stuff and try to get them to the table. Well, one of the ways you could probably destabilize Iran, or at least shake them up a little bit, is to literally shake them up. Perhaps the government has been working on a secret program to destabilize tectonic faults and earthquake faults. Perhaps, maybe something that's something they're doing out there, whether it be by lasers or whether it be by subterranean nuclear detonation. It is something that the government has been considering. The Panamint and Garlock faults have nothing to do with the San Andreas fault. They're limited to the north of the valley. They're not going to have any sort of effect. I hear that people in L.A., this was a 7.1 earthquake, people in L.A. barely felt it. They felt a little bit of swaying and jolts. It's not going to affect the major metropolitan areas or areas where there's large population centers. So it might be a little bit safer to be doing this kind of work out there in the middle of nowhere than fooling around with the San Andreas Fault or the Rogers Fault or the Hayward Fault. It might be much better to do this kind of stuff out there, if they're doing it. I'm not even saying they're doing it, but if you were going to do it anywhere, wouldn't you want to do it in the middle of the desert?
A half a century ago, despite all of our many problems, a couple of humans left Earth and landed on our moon for the very first time. Left low Earth orbit and landed on another astronomical body, our closest neighbor. Our closest neighbor of the sort, and still very far away. July 1969. Thanks to the efforts of thousands of people working all over America, thanks to anti-communist hysteria, and thanks to that rocket technology that we took back to Texas in the form of Nazi rocket scientist Wernher von Braun, two lucky ducks got to walk on the moon. And as Americans like to do, the astronauts immediately put up an American flag. We did it, mostly for the wrong reasons. But that is how exploration usually works. Somebody with lots of money wants more money. Somebody with no money wants some money. Somebody wants global domination. And next thing you know, there are newly discovered continents and elements and planets and galaxies. You know, both of my parents worked on this first moonshot in Houston, and my mother was kind enough to type up her recollections of what it was like. So here's an email from my mom. She says, here's some stuff about your dad's and my time at NASA Houston, Clear Lake City. Most of the people who worked at the manned spacecraft center in Clear Lake, Texas, near Houston, were from other places. Many of the employees, especially department heads, were former military. A lot of those people thought they were still in the military, and they acted accordingly. Working at NASA was exciting, meeting interesting people from all over the United States, and being a part of this mission was especially exciting. Your dad worked in the clean room where they supposedly had instruments that could weigh the grease from one's fingerprint. He worked there the entire time we were in Houston. He had to wear what they called a bunny suit, and all the people who worked in there had to go into an airlock area before getting into the actual clean room. No one could go in unless they worked there, and only after suiting up and going through the airlock chamber. I don't know a lot of what they did in there, but I know that they used chemicals and tested assorted things. I remember that your dad brought home Ziploc bags of all sizes, which were barely defective. They were being thrown out, so he took some out of the trash bin and brought them home. There was nothing like this in stores at this time. All of the women in our neighborhood wanted them. I gave a few away and kept the rest. He said that there were 3 American flags packed into these larger bags after being put through a special solution and dried. These flags went to the moon with the astronauts. Your dad packed one of them, and 2 of his co-workers each packed one. So we always said that maybe the one your dad packed is the flag that's on the moon. I worked for the manager of the logistics department. He was a very nice man who had been stationed in Greenland near the North Pole while in the Army. When I applied for the job, I was interviewed by 6 men, most of them, except the manager, seemed more interested in my appearance than necessary skills. I was 22 years old at the time. The logistics department consisted of 3 sections, the shipping and receiving department, where everything from rocket engines to pencil erasers came in and were sent out to other NASA facilities. And there was a cataloging department, where obviously everything was cataloged, and the reproduction department, which reproduced whatever was needed on the huge Xerox machines. This was where the first photos of the astronauts on the moon came in at our facility the Monday morning after the actual landing. Those photos went out to newspapers and television all over the world. My first assignment was to finalize the credentials of our department's many employees. I was amazed that these people were hired without completed paperwork. Most of the forms were not complete. I had to sit with these people one at a time to get information regarding their background, former addresses, relatives, neighbors, etc. It was like pulling teeth. Everyone was required to have, at minimum, a secret clearance. Many of the employees had top secret clearances. There was a fake moon near my office where I could look out almost any time and see astronauts suited up and walking on the surface of a very large round wooden area covered with gravel, rocks, boulders. It tilted all sorts of ways while these guys were walking on it. There were several different groups of astronauts doing this on a regular basis because NASA needed backups. This part of Texas was very hot and humid during spring and summer, and I could only imagine how hot it must have been in their suits. It was exciting to see this going on, but after seeing it so often, most of us eventually just thought, oh, there go those astronauts again. When Virgil Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee were killed in the NASA Kate Kennedy incident, everyone at the Houston facility and likely everywhere else, we were all shocked. This was a great loss and a very personal loss to everybody at NASA. Besides the tremendous sadness we all felt, we were also very concerned that the whole moon mission would be discontinued at least or shut down completely. But the mission went forward. Lessons learned from that great tragedy on January 27, 1967 made future missions safer. One day, while leaving the Houston facility, your dad and I were at the security exit lane and looked across the entry, and there was Lyndon B. Johnson, President of the United States, sitting in the back of a large black limo with his two beagles, him and her. The dogs were running from window to window. The windows were down, while LBJ chatted briefly with the entry guard. That was the closest I've ever been to a president of the United States. I waved to him, and he waved back. There was a very popular small butcher shop about 6 miles from where we lived, and every Saturday there was a long line of customers. This was Paul's Market, which sold the best beef in town. Since it took so long to get served, the women in line would chat with whomever was in front of them. One day while there, I was talking to a nice lady. She was next in line and took out her checkbook, and I noticed her check read Frank or Sue Borman. I was talking to an astronaut's wife. When Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon, July 16, 1969, the world watched. You were almost 4 years old, and we kept you awake to see this marvelous event. It was near midnight in Kima, Texas, and everyone in our subdivision went outside, and they were blowing their car horns and shouting. It was a huge celebration. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane. We broadcast from KCDZ-FM in Joshua Tree and on fine community radio stations on the West Coast via Public Radio Exchange. Soundscapes on tonight's program by Joshua Tree's own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Get our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Thank you for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
I hope you're enjoying my little co-host, the house wren. Anyway, have you felt the earth move lately? Well, we are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Our second episode today is titled Omen of the Ravens. Released July 3rd, 2020. Of course, I like it because ravens. Here we go.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. It's July and the desert is hot. So at least one part of this wild year is happening as expected. It cools off at night if we're lucky, a little bit. We love the high desert for a lot of reasons, but the fact that it usually cools off at night, that's a real good reason. You want to be able to open the windows a little bit at night, get some fresh air in the place. Open them up when it's late. Close the windows on the east-facing side as soon as you wake up. Sort of work your way around the cabin, the house, the shack, the trailer. Down in the low desert, people adapt in their own ways, getting up at 4 a.m. to walk the dog before the sidewalks are too hot, getting in some golf or whatever before the sun's up when it's still only 98 degrees outside. And even up here in the high desert, you cannot do a whole lot outside between about 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. You sort of miss out on a lot of the daytime. So you spend a lot of time under the swamp cooler with all the shades down. That's all right, it's seasonal adjustments. I've been thinking I'd like to get out of here, is what I'm saying. But not yet. And where could you go anyway? I think about Iceland a lot. Maybe it's the name. But especially because they're done with the coronavirus. Bars and restaurants are open. Life is back to normal. And it sounds like normal is actually pretty nice up there as opposed to our normal, which was wearying for most of us at best. Life was pretty good in Iceland to start with. They got rid of their grifter high-finance government, the one that bankrupted the country during the Great Recession. And now they've kicked the virus just like that. Helps to be an island. Helps to have a good standard of living, good health care, a healthy population in general. Helps to not have too many people. Iceland has all of 365,000 people, which sounds like a lot, but that's about the size of Bakersfield or Anaheim. If you told me I had to spend the rest of my life with the 384,000 people of Bakersfield, I guess I'd look for my gun. My grandpa's old Smith & Wesson 38 Special, which he kept after a brief employment as a railroad bull in Texas during the Depression when honest men needed to ride the rails. Boy, that must have been depressing work, being an hourly security guard for Southern Pacific or whatever, when everybody hated railroad bulls. My grandpa's favorite singer was Jimmy Rogers, who was always singing about riding the rails. Jimmy Rogers was a drifter, but like a lot of drifters, he worked now and then for the railroads. He was a traquero for a lot more time than he was a singing brakeman, which was his showbiz nickname. Singing brakeman sounded like a reliable worker. No threat to the system. Traqueros, well, they were mostly Mexican laborers who worked on the tracks a century ago. They worked in the yards, lived in labor camps. that differed from hobo jungles only in the sense that the former was okay with the railroad corporations and the latter was not. Because the railroads got value from having the traqueros live in rough camps where they did their work for the railroads. Anyway, Jimmie Rodgers lived in these traquero camps in Tucson and in Watts and a couple other southwestern towns. And the other day I was driving around and somebody requested Dolly Parton's Mule Skinner Blues and the DJ played Jimmie Rodgers' original instead. Blue Yodel number 8. So when the bad people come to get me and say you're going to Bakersfield for the rest of your life or Anaheim, your choice, I guess I'd pick Bakersfield, even though most of what I love about that place is long gone. All the old honky-tonks where Buck and Bonnie Owens performed. The old 99 through that honky-tonk town. I do it for fun sometimes. Take the 99 instead of the 5 on the way to Oakland. Driving slow, semi-trucks loaded with alfalfa and onions. Truck stop diners for breakfast after being on the highway all night long. Little jukeboxes on every table. Even then, the old stuff was mostly gone. They had a lot of bad 80s country instead. Barbara Mandrell, Alabama. The white people were in the endless Bakersfield suburbs already. They did not go downtown anymore. Downtown was abandoned to those fly-by-night churches that hang on for a few months until they can't make the rent anymore. And they just shuffle down the road. They show up in another unwanted downtown space, maybe set up in the old feed store or the carpet showroom. All the places that went bust or went out to the suburbs. A great migration spurred by the events of the late 1960s, people in Bakersfield were deeply concerned about the Black Panthers in LA and Oakland for some reason. Some reason having to do with an expectation that certain populations are supposed to suffer and be beaten in the streets by the police and denied meaningful work and decent salaries and polling places, etc., etc. Anyway, if it comes down to it, I'll go to Iceland. I'll beg for refuge, you know, whatever it takes.
My ancestors were Vikings from Norway. Just like you. They tried to put me in Anaheim.
Oh, I'll cry and everything. Tear my hair out, pound on the table. 14 days quarantine? Ma'am, I won't even notice. I've been quarantined out in the desert for half my life now. But there will be no escaping before the July 17 show. That much is clear. Friday, July 17 at Pappy and Harriet's Pioneer Town Palace, we are putting on a show, the 100th episode of Desert Oracle Radio, performed live on the big outdoor stage. Lots of space for everybody under the stars. I have tables and chairs out for everybody and booze, of course.
Deserts are dry lands where little rain falls. The mainline railroads over which freight and passengers are hauled westward to Los Angeles and Southern California must cross hundreds of miles of barren desert. Not enough rain falls here for most kinds of trees and plants to grow. When there is rain in the desert, the water runs off quickly or is dried up by the hot sun and wind. In the Southwest, the widest stretches of arid land where little or no rain falls are the Great Mojave and Colorado deserts in Arizona and Southern California. Travelers who cross the desert must take water with them. Canvas bags are used to carry water for drinking and other purposes. On the hot desert, the radiators of automobiles often boil dry. If a man could not get to water, he would die of thirst. But some places in the desert do have a supply of fresh water. Such a spot where there are springs or wells is called an oasis. Plants can grow and people can live at an oasis despite the intense heat. Small towns have grown up to supply the needs of travelers. Because there are places along highways where fuel and water can be obtained, it is no longer dangerous to travel long distances across the desert. The land outside an oasis is barren and dry. Some desert plants keep alive by storing up water whenever it rains. The few creatures that can live in the desert get some water from the plants that grow on the parched land. Strong winds, sweeping across the driest part of the desert, pick up loose sand and pile it into dunes. In the days before there were paved roads, settlers sometimes had to lay wooden tracks over the shifting sands so that they could haul heavy wagons into their communities. If their wells ran dry and there was no longer water for drinking and for growing food, the settlement had to be abandoned. Scattered across the deserts of the Southwest, there are many of these settlements which have been left to dry up and become ghost towns. Prospectors who went to the Southwest, searching for gold and silver, came even into Death Valley. It is the hottest place in all the desert. In much of the valley, the ground is covered with poisonous salts, which have spoiled most of the little water that can be found. From scorching Death Valley, one can see snow-capped Mount Whitney, the highest peak in the United States. Further on, hundreds of streams will join to make the great Colorado River. If too much water comes down from the mountains at one time, a river may overflow its banks. Sometimes a swollen river causes great damage. To help prevent floods and to store up the water from rain and melting snow, the waters of the Colorado River are held back by an immense wall of concrete. Electric current flows out over hundreds of miles of high-tension wires. Today, Los Angeles is beginning to compete with eastern industrial cities that downtown Los Angeles is unable to serve the entire city. The growing demand for California styles is building still another industry in the Southwest. Oil derricks are a common sight around Los Angeles. Electric pumps draw oil out of the ground through the port of Los Angeles to flow from the dam to the Imperial Valley has changed a worthless desert into oranges, lemons, and grapefruit and must be protected from frost. Each orange is wrapped in tissue paper. It is distributed through underground pipes to every building and home and provides healthful recreation. The city's parks and playgrounds are green throughout the year. The very existence of millions of people that few people realize how necessary it is to them, or in how many ways it serves man with electricity. New factories can be built in the American Southwest.
You're listening to Desert Oracle Radio. And that's some red, blue, black, silver you're listening to. On on this July 4th weekend. They canceled the fireworks in Yucca Valley because of the Rona. And we're going to be at very limited capacity at our show at Pappy's because of the Rona. So that's why there are only a few tickets left. Now, usually at the outdoor stage at Pappy and Harriet's, they pack in 1,000 people for the Pixies or the Breeders or Lucinda or whatever hallowed name. But thanks to our rolling pandemic, it's just a few hundred people, and we got the whole place to ourselves. I've barely mentioned the show because I don't want to jinx it, but now that we're in the month of July, and the show is barely 2 weeks away, I got no choice. You're gonna need to wear a mask to get in. And because it's Pappy's on a dirt street lined with Old West movie buildings, you'd sure look good in one of those bandana face masks, you know? You don't have to look like a dental hygienist unless that's what you do for work. Hell, you can ride your horse down and tie it up outside. If you want, tickets are still on sale. Just go to Pappy and Harriet's website. Show is on Friday, the 17th of July. Doors at 6. Live music from our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver and Herbie Benham IV from the Sunday Band starting up at 6:30. And we will perform and record the 100th episode of Desert Oracle Radio starting about sundown. So do make sure you're all settled in by sundown. We would not want you to get lost out there wandering around. Sometimes things happen. After the show, after the hangovers, after the fun is all gone, and I'm staring down the barrel again, the barrel of another 100 episodes, another half a century of being alive, if I live that long, well, maybe then it's time to go to Iceland. Every summer, I swear to God, I've got the picture books out, you know, like Time Life books or whatever, temperate nations of the world, places that are cool in the summer, AAA brochures, looking at Scotland, Nova Scotia, the Orkneys, Norway. Maybe they'll take me in Iceland. I've never been there. Back in the previous decade, a lot of my free-spending colleagues went to Iceland because it was a place to go, you know, get some Instagram pictures. I always felt too guilty to do that kind of thing, burning up a jet plane full of jet fuel to go wander around somewhere half a world away for a 3-day weekend. Plus, that's not a cheap airfare from the Mojave Desert. But maybe now, just this time, just for the summer, the cool Icelandic summer, you live in a place like America, and everything about Iceland sounds like paradise. Iceland has a market economy with relatively low taxes compared to other OECD countries, as well as the highest trade union membership in the world. And it maintains a Nordic social welfare system that provides universal health care and education for its citizens. Iceland ranks high in economic, democratic, and social equality, currently ranking 3rd in the world by median wealth per adult. Ranked number 6 on the list of most developed countries in the world by the United Nations Human Development Index, and it ranks number 1 on the Global Peace Index Iceland runs almost completely on renewable energy. It's like they don't have a Pentagon up there. Hey, let's get the mailbag out because it has been too long and I'm getting kind of buried here. First, I have to mention a letter that I cannot mention due to national security, but it's a good one. It came this way from the Intermountain West. I appreciate the letter and the evidence and the enclosed brewery sticker, which will join many such stickers on the side of the big yellow metal office file cabinet, which I acquired for $20 at the Angel View thrift store about 5 years ago. The thing about this kind of evidence is that even when it's good, it could still be anything, you know? Anyway, now it's in the weird files here at the Desert Oracle offices. Sometime soon, I need to tell you all about some interesting things that I've been seeing in the night skies over the compound here. I mean, right over the compound. It fills my heart with joy to look up and see these little whatever they are just sort of dancing in the dark overhead. Good omens, I think. Reminders to pay attention, at least. Now, speaking of omens, a lot of people have ideas about ravens and what it means when ravens appear where you live. But where I live, the ravens are pretty much always around. And lately, a gang of ravens, murder of ravens, seems overwrought. Well, this gang of ravens comes around maybe an hour before sunset and they socialize on my roof. So I hear all this banging and I go out and there they are. God knows what they're doing to produce so much noise. There's one that's always surprised when I pop out and look up there and it does sort of ack and then it flies over to a Joshua tree, but the rest are just vibing, as they say. So Justin writes in from Lafayette, Louisiana. Now, from the look of Justin's last name, which I will not disclose, I believe he might be of a Cajun disposition. You know, a lot of my relatives on my mother's side, the Cajun-Irish side, come from up by Lafayette and St. Landry's Parish. Anyway. Dear Mr. Lane, on a recent episode of Desert Oracle, you expressed your admiration for the desert raven. I too am fond of ravens, all corvids really, and I'm currently engaged in a project to befriend some neighborhood crows with judicious offerings of shell peanuts. I've heard that once you've gained their trust, some crows and ravens will reciprocate by bringing you small gifts, shiny things, bits of colored glass, lost jewelry. But like any relationship, it takes time, a lot of time and effort and commitment to reach that stage of mutuality. Anyway, I was reminded of this photo I took years ago at the Petrified Forest and thought you might enjoy a copy. The only copy, maybe. Though I'm sure I've got the negative scrolled away somewhere. It's not a great photo, but I've always been fond of it. Not least of all because I beat my future ex-wife to the punch and snagged the shot before she could snap a similar one. Some suppose ravens are omens of ill tiding, of bad times to come. But what do they know? Well, best to you and yours. Thank you for the podcast that always goes to the top of the queue. Justin. Well, maybe it was an omen regarding your marriage Justin. Anyway, thank you for the photo print. Two big old ravens on top of one of those kind of national park directional wooden signs that says Agate Bridge. I'm not going to get to all these letters. And I only had a little pile here in the studio. I got this postcard, and it's got three bobcat stamps. And on the other side, let's see, there's a picture of a Joshua tree, and there's like a UFO or a submarine shooting by in the sky, and there's this kind of crazy character who says, "Hi, Ken." Well, hi, whoever you are. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great and mysterious Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, California. You can hear us in the high desert on your car radio or your portable radio or your transistor radio. Do you walk around with a transistor radio in your pocket? You should, you know. It's free. Sometimes the radio is free. We're on 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Friday nights up here. And you can listen whenever you want, but try to do it after dark on our podcast. And we're on a couple of fine West Coast community stations, from Washington State to Burbank, California. I'm your host, Ken Lane. I hope to see a bunch of you Friday, July 17th. We got a couple more shows on the radio before then. Hey, don't set off fireworks in your little brother's face. Do I have to tell you again? Thanks for listening. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
My deep thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with the most recent episode of Desert Oracle Radio. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.